I think a lot of looking at foster care, foster children, is about looking at the context of their behavior in the here and now.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you're listening to Into the Fold. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. In December 2014, a 7-year-old girl, we'll call her Sasha, and her grandmother, we'll call her Sarah, came into the Harris County Protective Services Medical Clinic for an intake appointment. Sarah was having difficulties with her granddaughter, staring spells, bedwetting, and difficult behavior. After meeting with a care manager, it was found that services were needed, not just for Sasha, but her grandmother as well. Sarah was feeling overwhelmed and wasn't even sure that she'd be able to continue caring for her granddaughter, who had already been through the foster care system. Things looked bleak, but with the care manager helping to connect them to services and resources and with steady follow-up, Sasha and Sarah were put on the right track. The staff at Harris County Clinic acted as both advocate and traffic cop for this family, helping them coordinate the array of services that Sasha and her grandmother needed. Now, this little story is one example of what we mean by integration. Harris County Protective Services Integrated Healthcare Program for Foster Children was started in 2012 with a grant from the Hogg Foundation. In 2015, the foundation commissioned an evaluation of the program because we wanted to know what kind of impact it was having. So among our findings, children who were surveyed demonstrated a 20% decrease in risk for behavioral disorders, and stakeholders, that is families, caregivers, staff, also reported a high degree of satisfaction with the program. Now, these findings are not conclusive, but they are suggestive. What do they mean? And why do we think the integrated healthcare model might be especially promising for foster care children? Here to help us answer some of these questions is Jackie McMillan, Children's Services Administrator of Harris County Protective Services. They are not only a grantee of the Hogg Foundation, but just recently, their integrated healthcare clinic was named the first foster care center of excellence in Harris County. Jackie, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So help us to get a sense of the population you're serving. What is it about foster kids that makes treatment as usual ineffective? And what are you trying to improve with your program?
Well, there's several different questions there. And first, let me start with the children that are in our system. And I really hate to call it a system, but in fact, it's a network of services that are provided to foster children in our clinic. And we're Harris County Protective Services for Children. We have had our clinic operating and available to foster children since 1972. So we've had a long-term involvement in working with children who ages infancy to age 17 needing medical services. And essentially, that's very much how we started to work with foster children, to ensure that their medical needs were adequately evaluated and that the services were provided for any kinds of issues and problems noted in the evaluation. We later added dental services for children, and most recently, we added behavioral health services for kids. So our population primarily are foster children who are coming into the system itself the foster care system, and could very well be in the foster care system for anywhere from 30 days to much more. In terms of what we're trying to do, the question that has been posed or was posed at the time that we were planning for services was, what kind of care are children in the CPS system receiving? And using a collaborative committee of people from various stakeholders that included CPS alumni, foster care agencies, caseworkers, administrators. We've had people from outside of the organization, like city officials, you name it. We had everybody sitting at the table. And what came back to us is that many of the children seem to have problems obtaining care and getting that care documented, and that care, obtaining that care for children who were placed with kinship families, with relatives, that became even more difficult, getting services to kids. So what we set out to do was to establish a system that would, in fact, cater to the needs of foster care children in one place, and that children did not have to go all over the city of Houston to get the most basic of care. Essentially, what we wanted to accomplish is to make sure that as children were in the CPS system, that their well-being was being looked at and cared for, and that these children did not lose ground in their physical or mental health issues, problems, what have you.
Okay, so Jackie, I want to go back a few minutes to something that you said that I think is vitally important. Where you said that, you know, you got all of the stakeholders at the table. Now I sometimes wonder if it's almost misleading to say that these kids are underserved. In fact, they're often highly visible to different systems because of their circumstances. But we're often talking about systems that don't always, you know, talk to each other. And it seems to me that for your program, it's vitally important to get different stakeholders around, you know, at the table at the same time. So is that what you're saying?
I do agree with you that it's crucial to have all of the different entities at the table that will impact the life of a child who is involved in CPS services. And this probably has not been one of our best things, or that we've been good at doing, is getting everybody to the table. I think we've gotten better at it, and as a result, I think that foster children are benefiting a little bit better. I do find that foster children are visible. People are talking about children in CPS custody, some of the abuse and neglect that occurs to children. And yet, the systems, all of the different systems that impact the lives of kids are not talking to each other, are not talking about what's in the best interest of these children. And so what it leads to is essentially miscommunication.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, this whole issue of whether or not these kids are overserved, I mean, it almost sounds like, you know, that it's possible for kids to get too much of the wrong kind of attention, or maybe attention that's not really sensitive to their actual needs. And so I wonder if that may be kind of what it is that you're getting at.
I think you're absolutely right, Ike. It's not a matter of these children necessarily receiving the correct treatment. And it certainly seems to be more of an issue around looking at where the child is in the here and now. When children come in to foster care, sometimes we think that this is a relief for them. And for some of them, there is a bit of relief. But if you will think for a moment about a child who's coming into perhaps a home that they've never been in before, their life is beginning to change as the rules and conditions in a foster home present to them as new. These are things that I think even for an adult would be quite upsetting. And so when we see that, if we don't look at what the acute problem is, that, you know, a child has moved from, you know, where they've been, even though it may not have been the most comfortable setting, they're in a brand new setting in a foster home. They're needing to adjust to that. Sometimes that adjustment is certainly pretty rocky. And so you'll begin to see behaviors early on that parents would say that their child never had. So I think a lot of looking at foster children is about looking at the context of their behavior in the here and now, given that the trauma of moving from their home into different settings, sometimes multiple settings, creates a problem that furthers providers looking at children from the perspective of a troubled child, when it may not be a troubled child as much as we are looking at a child who has had troubles and is trying to cope with some of those troubles.
Okay, so yeah, I'm so glad that you said that, Jackie. The context of the here and now, and as if you know that encompasses so much more than just the particular bundle of symptoms, or even just the personal history that, you know, that kids show up with, right?
Right. And as you start to look at, you know, the context of what's happening in these kids' lives, and you begin to really get a deeper understanding of that, not to then, you know, bring in those other behaviors or symptoms, it gives you kind of a different look. It's not just, you know, that we have a child who's ADHD. It gives you more of a context to think about what might this child be experiencing.
Okay, so do you have any, like, information or stories that gives you a sense of the kind of impact that your program's approach to these kids is having?
may be one of the first families and cases that we worked with after we started the integrated model. We had two children that came in for medical care, and while they were there, they presented some behaviors that were very worrying for the caregiver, and the caregiver became very frustrated and, you know, talked about how difficult it was to comfort the children that she was working with and was placed with her.
Right.
And so as we listened to her story and, you know, tried to comfort the children ourselves, we begin to also think about, you know, how to best look at their behavior. There were a lot of difficulties around their diet and, you know, what they would eat. We also talked with the foster parent about some regressive behavior with toileting. And so there were a lot of concerns. So we made a decision in consultation with another part of our program to really begin to talk with the caregiver every day, to follow what their diet was. We even talked with the caseworker about talking with the parents about the children's dietary situation. And so we brought a lot of things together to really begin to soothe, comfort, help these children become just a little bit more settled. In the matter of a month, we had the children back into the office after checking with them pretty consistently over that month. And what we saw were different children, basically, that they were laughing, animated, much more engageable. They had made some steps in a direction that we thought might be supportive to them and supportive to the caregiver. But we felt that bringing the different services together under one umbrella also helped these children to settle, to allow people to comfort them so that they could then begin to move forward in their little lives.
Okay. Helping kids move forward in their little lives. That's about as good a way of putting it as any I could come up with.
Yes.
So this is Jackie McMillan of Harris County Protective Services, kind of just filling out for us what it is that we mean by integrated health care, you know, for foster youth in particular. And Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time to share your knowledge with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Because we're talking again about child welfare, what better time to hear from an expert on child welfare law and policy? Kate Murphy, a senior child welfare policy associate for Texans Care for Children. She's here with us to fill us in on the policy landscape, the always changing policy landscape for child welfare in Texas. Kate, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
So before we start, why not just tell our listeners, you know, who you are and how it is that you know us?
Well, I am the Senior Child Welfare Policy Associate over at Texans Care for Children. I've been working there for about a year now, and prior to that, I was a Hogg Mental Health Policy Fellow, and so I'm very familiar with and love the Hogg Foundation.
Okay, wonderful. And yes, As a matter of fact, you know, over the last several years, the foundation has been trying to seed the earth with its policy fellows, and we're always very proud of the wonderful work that they're doing, work that I could never do because I've never found the Capitol to be a particularly interesting place, and have to take people's word for it whenever they tell me how much exciting goings on take place there. Yeah, whatever. That's always, I mean, I can only listen to so many suits.
I can certainly understand that.
Speechify and whatnot. Anyway, we're still very glad to have you here, though. So the first time that we covered this topic, it was in 2016, I think right after the problems with our child welfare system had erupted into a full-blown scandal, or so it seemed. Judge Janice Jack had just given her very scolding diagnosis, her ruling that our system was not just faulty, but unconstitutional. So what have you seen out of this legislature that has given you cause for hope or cause for concern?
There's been a little bit of both. So I think I'll start with the hopes. We had a huge investment in child protection this year. We saw a boost to funding for prevention so we can try to keep more children safely at home with their families. And along with that boost in funding came some strategic planning for how to expand those services and really get it to the people who need those prevention services the most. One of the biggest wins was for our workforce this session. We saw a huge investment, which actually started right before the session. We had an emergency funding hearing where we saw caseworkers' salaries increase by $1,000 a month or $12,000 a year.
Yeah.
And with that salary increase, we also added 829 new caseworker positions. That was sustained this session in the budget. And we also added an additional 597 caseworker positions on top of that. And since that happened in December, we're already seeing a return on that investment. We're seeing caseworkers get out to check on kids sooner. We're seeing them have more contact with kids. We're seeing improved outcomes. We're seeing lower turnover, which is really, really exciting. And so we're hopeful that that trend will continue. Mm-hmm. We also put more in place to support our caseworkers in policy, things like secondary trauma support to make sure that their mental health is cared for while they're caring for our children, and caseload management system to make sure that they're spending their time well with the kids and making meaningful contact and really being able to go out and check on those kids and make sure that the services they're receiving, that the home they're being placed in, are really appropriate and really what's best for those kids.
Right, because I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off. One of the main issues is exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. You know, that child welfare really needs to be made a more hospitable space in which to have a career.
Mm-hmm.
And that may have been, in fact, you know, one of the main problems with our system currently.
That's certainly the case. And so this was a big win. And another win would be that we had long-term solutions for creating new homes. So in the short term, I think we're still going to struggle on that front. Uh-huh. But in the long term, I think we can look forward to seeing more homes for our kids. The legislature provided more support for kinship, which are extended family members who step up to take care of kids. That was a big boost. They increased rates for providers, which means that we're going to hopefully be building out more therapeutic capacity, more foster homes, have better recruitment, better efforts on that front because there's more funding to work with to build out those homes. There's going to be a capacity needs plan put into place,
yeah,
a study for how to recruit more young adults, some work around moving kids who are placed in hospitals and in mental health facilities out of those facilities when it's when their needs have been met there. Right now, we've seen a lot of kids staying in the hospital way beyond what they need because they simply didn't have another place to go. So we had a bill that is going to be taking a hard look at that. Another piece of this puzzle is community-based foster care. And there have been a lot of questions around what that looks like, but we know at least in terms of placement services, we've seen a lot of success in Fort Worth where they've been working at a regional level to build out capacity, build out more homes, and they've really done that right. in a targeted way and had a lot of success doing that piece of it. So we should be seeing up to 5 areas total doing that moving forward. We also expanded the role of the court and of judges and of the attorneys and the CASAs and all of the people who work as part of the CPS court case in protecting kids. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of work for youth who are aging out of care, including things like making sure they have birth certificates, social security cards, driver's licenses, getting them help to learn what they need to know once they age out of care earlier. We used to start those services at age 16. We're going to be doing it at 14. And we're going to be taking a look at what those services are and how we can improve upon them. There are some better educational supports and employment supports put in place. So those were all some really big positive changes that happened this session. But as I said, there were also some concerns. There were some things that we're worried about. One of those conversations is on the front end. There were a lot of comments by legislators and some advocacy organizations that CPS or the Child Protective Services are almost an enemy of the family and are just out to take kids away from their parents and that we're just removing kids from their homes for no good reason, which really isn't the case. So we were very concerned that those conversations were happening as often as they were at the Capitol. You know, we want to look at ways to support parents when they need help, to provide mental health services to parents when appropriate, substance use services to parents when appropriate, intellectual developmental disability services, poverty supports, whatever we need to put in place, we want to make sure those are there. But it's a very troubling simplification that we're removing kids at an alarming rate, particularly when Texas has one of the lowest rates of removal in the entire country.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. There are only 5 or 6 states that have a lower removal rate than Texas, which is pretty incredible given the size of our child population. We have the largest emerging child population. We also have high rates of child poverty and high rates of domestic violence, mental health challenges, and substance use disorders. So the fact that we've been able to keep kids safely with their families in so many cases is actually pretty remarkable.
Okay, so a lot of good news, but also still quite a bit of room for improvement. Kate Murphy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.